Hello and welcome back to another episode of Lux's Litterbox. This is really kind of our first episode for the full season. Apologies again for not having as much non-conference content, but here we are. So me and Luke are here today, and I guess to begin with, Luke, what's your favorite part of the season been so far? Just to give a brief overview.
Well, we missed a lot in that time we were off, I think, you know?
We need to stop taking these breaks like this.
It was a busy fall, too, I think, for both of us. Because, you know, it's like our senior year or whatever, apparently.
Whatever, yeah.
But, I mean, there are several highlights in the early season. I think for me, obviously, you know, some of us went to Asheville. We were there for the whole weekend. We saw us beat Maryland. We saw us really come very, very close to beating Clemson. And, you know, a steal that could have been a foul or a foul that should have been a steal maybe decided that game. But we won't talk about that.
You know, I heard that they have, like, wanted posters of you and Cole and Asheville, and you're not, like, allowed back after
yeah,
that.
They banned us from the arena, actually, for comments after the game.
Yeah.
Related to the officiating, but...
Dang.
Yeah.
That's really tough. Some of us went to Asheville, but some of us also went to Charlotte. And I will report that they have a Bojangles inside the arena at UNC Charlotte, which is honestly the greatest move I've seen from a rival.
I mean, I'm like jealous because, like, usually we use, like, the Bojangles joke as, like, a sales pitch for Davidson, but, like, we don't have one in the arena. You know, we have the Den, that's it.
Yeah, so. And I mean, I would love a Bojangles partnership. We've already got that Brick House partnership for alcohol. Bojangles, we need some chicken in the arena. Second, obviously, the second most fun thing about that game was winning. That is also another place that I would like to not show my face again, because you were getting into it with the UNC Charlotte fans.
I think we need to start more fights for it to be a real rivalry, maybe. But
and you have taken that into your own hands, single-handedly sparking the Davidson UNC Charlotte rivalry. So I appreciate that from you. You've definitely left your legacy on the campus.
And I mean, you look at Charlotte now; they're first in the American. Would they be there without the motivation that came from losing to Davidson? I don't think so. And we played really well in that game too, which is also what I want to talk about.
Shot lights out.
Our adjusted offensive efficiency for that game was 135.2. That's obviously the best on the year. That's the best we've had under Matt McKillop also, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. Hit 12 threes out of 23. Just a really good performance all around. And obviously David Skogman too.
Oh, completely. And that's also very much what you expect to see, at least every once in a while, from a Davidson team, just to be shooting lights out, being unconscious from three. And it honestly, I think it felt great to kind of get that bitter taste out of our mouths from last year and that overtime heartbreaking loss to Charlotte, and to get the cup back. What's the name of it again?
It's the Hornet's Nest.
The Hornet's Nest. Okay.
Women have the 704 cup, and
okay,
that game was really fun too.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, the women have been amazing this year. I was not able to go to the Wake Forest game, but I know that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was Asheville weekend.
But I was able to watch, even though it was a little bit of a heartbreaking loss, the UNC game was awesome, coming down to the wire. Just honestly, so excited to see where this women's team goes as the season progresses. Picked up a lot of really big Power 5 wins, obviously over Wake, over Duke. And honestly, what I'm devastated about is the injuries that have kind of accumulated and that have kind of kept us from seeing what this team would have looked like at its full strength.
Yeah, we haven't seen Lee Schutz or Tomlinson at Anupe like all year, and now with Rosie Deegan's loss and that George Mason game, which was just like the game from hell against a team that was really hot.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Rosie, friend of the program, she was on our trivia episode last year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just a phenomenal presence in the locker room and on campus. So
yeah, really appreciate everything she's done for her 4 years at Davidson. Just a complete amazing representative of the program and everything that's going on at Davidson. Also, Ellie has been a little bit banged up too. Obviously missed some of the end of the non-conference. So not been operating at full 100% strength too. So that's been a little bit... There's nothing really you can do with injuries like that.
Yeah.
It's just sad to see. And you can coulda, shoulda, woulda your way to death with that. But I think there's a lot of good basketball left to be played for the women's team. I hope that they can make a run in the A-10 tourney.
Absolutely. I mean, and you look at our schedule, too. I mean, we've had, like, four double-bye contenders already, basically, in a period where, you know, your best player is clearly not back at 100%. I'd say that today, we're recording this after the Duquesne game, but today against Duquesne was probably the first game for me where it was like she was clearly back and just giving them buckets.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's had 15, 15, and then 18 today in the last three games, yeah, which is just really impressive. It's back to what, you know, the standard she set last year when she averaged like 16. And Charlie Dunn has really come on as well.
Yep.
She had a good game today as well. So I'm still looking forward to see what the team can do. You just got to get through this brutal stretch,
yep,
and overcome. And, you know, you have Rosie Deegan in the locker room, too. Her presence is always going to be felt.
Yeah, and then I think up next, got UMass, who, that's a nice little tune-up game.
That's a game you never should, yeah.
Yeah, never want to overlook anybody, but a nice tune-up game to kind of get back on track. And then a tough one in Philly against St. Joe's.
That's a tough one.
That's one you, if you win, you feel pretty good. I don't know what the chances are now for Davidson getting an at-large bid now that we've lost four conference games already. But, I mean, like you said, the conference games that we have lost have been to legit teams in the A-10.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have that game at St. Joe's, I think at Rhode Island as well. And then after that, the schedule does clear up a little bit. So, you know, you push 11, 12 conference wins, you get that. Maybe you can get back into that double bye, and anything can happen from there. So
exactly. We know how crazy the A-10 tournament can get.
And finally, I just want to like point out like the freshmen who've stepped up. Sylvie Jackson was playing really well, and fortunate to see her get hurt. We don't really know anything yet other than we've seen her around on crutches on the bench. But Katie Donovan, too, has played pretty well. And today, Chloe Oliver had like a 5-point run by herself to give us the lead into the half. And you know, the point guard position now, we need another ball handler. And I think she's starting to step up a little bit, which is really nice to see. I think she's going to have a nice season.
All right. So shifting gears a little bit, now that we've talked about all the great things, all the kind of melancholic things that we've seen, let's talk about the things that make us frustrated and mad. Luke, I know you've had a very frustrating experience in the student section lately. And I feel like this is a big topic of debate. Could you tell us a little bit about that? We'll do a little therapy here.
This is, yeah, you're overstating it a little bit maybe, but it is a topic of debate because, you know, last year, this team is about on the same level if you look at all the metrics, which we're going to get into later, and we're going to discuss how we maybe improved, how we maybe haven't, but, you know, last year, the student section was still pretty strong at times, right? It feels like, you know, Charlotte had the shot, and that was kind of devastating, but, like, still, an A-10 play against VCU, against SLU, like, those were good games, about mm-hmm. the game level of game that Richmond was, and the student turnout was still great. We still stood the entire game and had a lot of chance. I was doing a lot of games last year for Cat Stats on the sideline, but
You could still see.
You could still see, basically.
You could feel the energy when you walked into Belk.
And this last game, while I was on the front row, I tried to move out of the way of the people behind me a little bit, but they still, you know, everybody just sat the entire game. And I don't want to be like a stickler, like you must stand if you are in the student section. But like, it is a college basketball game, and you're playing closest thing we have to a rival in the A-10. Let's be real. And they're the second best team in the conference by net ranking and pretty much every other metric you want to look at. And it's like, how do you get that engagement back? How do you get that fire back? It just feels like we're kind of missing it.
I think there's two things that we need to talk about. First, I think one big key point is I feel like standing in the student section, standing for like a concert, obviously, I mean, it depends on the vibes. I'm a tall person, so I always am very self-conscious about like blocking the view of other people, but it's a college basketball game. You know, there's a lot going on. Obviously you want everybody to have a great time, but I would love to have a great time and win. And I feel like we can bring the energy and we can influence that at Belk.
Absolutely.
But also I feel like what we kind of maybe should talk about is I feel like there's a lack of campus like school spirit that we've seen recently, maybe just because we've you know, we've kind of struggled in a lot of athletic teams' seasons, I guess. The men's soccer team had a great one run in the over the regular season, won a tournament game, and so we got to see a great turnout there for that run. But you know, men's basketball, women's basketball especially, there should be a lot of students there. Like, that's a team that's had a great season. We should see a lot more turnout than we actually do. And obviously, Davidson students, they're busy, they're doing work and stuff. But even if that's, even that, that should be more, a couple more hundred than what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and it is, you know, like, I mean, we're guilty too. I mean, we didn't do the show last semester. We're busy people. It's like you had a game at the perfect time, 4 o'clock, basically. You could go, then you can go, you know, pregame, then you can go to F afterwards, maybe. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. Yeah, and people just, they showed up, but it wasn't quite the same. And
it was a dead atmosphere.
And the theory I floated is that since COVID-19, this upper class has become very jaded and disconnected from all things in general. And it's not even necessarily a Davidson problem.
Mm.
But also, like, I don't know, even the first game I was here, which was the VCU game, the yeah. COVID year, there were like 200 of us in like the upper level, basically.
Yeah.
And we stood the entire game, of course, barring the timeouts and halftime.
Yeah. No, I completely agree on the COVID thing. Like, I feel like, I mean, it's done a number to college sports. So I wonder if that means it'll get better once we graduate. Unfortunately, that's the case. But, you know, I've had underclassmen come up to me in class and be like, hey, you're a senior. Like, what sports are fun to watch? Like, what teams are good? Mm-hmm. And, you know, normally I'm able to say, depending on the year, there's some electric teams. Like, women's soccer had that great run, maybe our freshman year.
Yeah.
Obviously, men's soccer this year. There's been a host of women's basketball, obviously. There's been a host of teams that have had some really great stretches. Women's volleyball, can't say enough about them. But right now, it feels like we're kind of in a dead period where it's kind of just been all demoralizing. And men's basketball kind of has been leading that front. And I think this is the biggest thing. And this is a great segue. It's not fun basketball to watch.
That's the thing, yeah, is when I ask myself, what's Davidson's identity? Just even looking at statistics, let me read a couple for you. Offensively, we're 185 in adjusted efficiency, 183 in effective field goal percentage. We take care of the basketball. We're 138th in turnovers, but like not the moving the needle. We don't offensive rebound particularly well, but that's also not our game. So we get to the free throw line, but we just don't light it up. You know, we're 225 in 3-point percentage. And we're 142 in twos. And in free throws, we're 254.
And this is all out of what, like 300 and something teams?
350 something.
So it's not awful by any stretch of the imagination. It's just when you see shooting statistics, you automatically assume Davidson's going to light up something. Whether that's threes, like with, I mean, Steph Curry's is obviously the first one to come to mind, but, you know, Davidson historically has been a great 3-point shooting team. Whether you have some great inside players like Menenga, whether that's Luka.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
You wanna say.
Yeah. There hasn't been anything that we've dominated. Because here's the thing, you mentioned offensive rebounding. Why shouldn't we be a good offensive rebounding team? We have a player that's 6'10". We have a player that's 6'11". We have another player that's 6'10". We have a player that's 6'9". We have one of the tallest teams in the country. And we are awful at offensive rebounding.
I don't know. I mean, we shoot threes. We're top 75 in 3-point rate. And naturally, that should lead to more offensive rebounds. But, you know, it doesn't. And then defensively, this is the one thing I think we can highlight is like improving a lot, but still, if you're looking on KenPom Torvik, you're not seeing like a lot of green boxes. You know what I mean?
Of like, it's a lot of red.
It's just a lot of white boxes for like
mediocre. Eh, yeah.
And one red one for block percentage, which, you know, we knew that wasn't one of our strengths anyway, but we defend the 3-point line. Okay. We held Dayton to one of their worst shooting games. I believe they were 7 of 21 from 3 against us, for example. And we're borderline top 100 in defensive efficiency on KenPom/Torvik/, you know, whatever metrics
yeah.
you want to use. And our rebounding on defense, which was such a head-scratcher last year, is obviously a lot better. We're top 100 in that, barely. 27.3% offensive rebound percentage against. And we don't foul a lot, but we're not that aggressive, so that's not really that surprising. The only green box, and this is the thing that irks me, is free throw percentage against. We're top 10 in the nation in free throw percentage against.
Which is obviously something you can control.
Yeah, our free throw defense is really good.
Yeah, so congratulations, Luke. You and all 20 people in the student section the last game, that was all you right there.
Yeah.
So honestly, the fact that we are 11-7 right now, even with a historically bad shooting clip, it's kind of impressive. But I miss the days that once we got to the free throw line, it felt like it was automatic.
Yeah,
you know, like Foster, the game was over. Foster 90%.
If we were in the double bonus, it's like, you know, it's over.
Yeah,
basically.
Lee 90%. You know, it felt like you said, like it was over. Now I'm nervous every time.
And we did well against Fordham shooting free throws. I think Grant only missed like one or two, and Reed was 12 of 12, which is like he's 12 of 12 in two games this year. It's kind of crazy, but, you know, it's just like these close overtime games that just burns you.
And we've gotten a lot of them, a lot of close games, a lot of overtime games, ETSU, Rhode Island, George Washington, Richmond. It's unfortunate that it's becoming a little bit of a pattern that we're seeing where we play pretty well, we at least keep ourselves in the game, and then we kind of slip up in the last couple seconds, whether that's a costly turnover, whether that's a free throw or whatever. But it's an unfortunate pattern that we're seeing. And obviously Fordham was the inverse of that pattern. Fordham, I felt like that was going to slip away, but then it didn't. And we end up killing it for the last, probably 10 minutes of the second half. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out a way to, you know, not do that. That would be nice. So, Luke, in your and our absolute genius, you know, we've been doing this. We've been basketball fans. We played basketball. Yeah. What would be your recommendation? Who do you want to see more of?
First of all, I think, we've made the change and Bobby Durkin is in the starting lineup, but like still, want him to take 15 shots a game. I mean,
Bobby has been a godsend this year.
Just a revelation. We knew he was going to be special when he hit the shot against Maryland. And I mean, you know, he's not been like lighting the world on fire. Like he's averaging 20
but
a game.
He's been consistent.
He's been a rock.
And he has been something that we typically see. You know, he's hitting about 38% from the three-point line on 90 shots, which is great. Skogman has been great from the three-point line, too. 45%, 47 or 46%. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Take it any day of the week. Outside of that, three-point percentage has been a little bit iffy. Connor Cochera actually has been pretty good, too. 36% from the three-point line. Solid. Other than that, What was the stats for, if you take out Skogman's three-point percentage, what was the stats for the team? It was, 30%?
Yeah, we're at 30.2% without Skogman shooting, and with Skogman shooting on the year, we're at 32.6 or 8, I'm not sure, but just really averaged with Skogman, and without him, we're pretty clearly below average.
So, and, you know, Skogman's been a little bit banged up, too, so you just gotta hope, you gotta pray that he does not go out with any other injuries, or else you're in deep trouble.
And, I mean, obviously you have to shut him out because he played an excellent game yesterday, and he has carried us in our best wins this year. I'm looking right now at KenPom, you know, the list of contributors. Grant Huffman is a major contributor. I want to see Skogman into that category of 24 to 28% of possessions used. And I want to see Bobby Durkin get into that significant contributor category because he's in the role player category down, which is 16 to 20% of possessions used.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're moving in that direction, though. So
yeah. How do you feel about the capacity that Reed Bailey is being used in? He's not shooting necessarily great from three, but he is hitting about 50% of his shots from two land. And free throws are at a pretty solid clip, too, about 80%. So how are you feeling about his usage so far?
Yeah, the thing with Reed for me is, even though he's missed threes, I just want him to keep shooting them because, like, his form to me, it looks solid. You see his free throw percentage, it's at 80%, and you know he can make shots. And then you look at his free throw rate, he does a really good job of getting to the free throw line. Out of the thousands of college basketball players in the country, his free throw rate is 59.8%, which is top 75 in the country. That's really good. He gets to the free throw line a lot, and he makes a lot of free throws. So, yeah, you do want him in that sort of big man role, but you have to wonder, like, when are the shots going to start falling? And I think they will. And he can be a more traditional, you know, Davidson big man who can stretch, be the stretch four. But
and that would be amazing, especially as a replacement. If you can get him anywhere close, if you get him close to Skogman's consistency from the three-point line, then you have a star in your hands. But especially since Skogman has felt like he's not been as physical. Actually, looking at this stat line, Bailey has 7 dunks compared to Skogman's 2. Love to see, like you said, love to see Bailey develop. Bobby Durkin has been great too. I love to see Spadone find where he could carve his niche, because he's had some great upside. We've talked about this before in the podcast. He's had some great upside when we know how to use him in the right moments.
Yeah, I do want to talk about Ashile a little bit, because at the start of the year, his offensive numbers were not great. They were below his offensive rating for most of the first half of the year was below 60, which is like 0.6 points per possession when you're on the floor, basically, is what it's saying.
Which in national average, by the way, it was around 1, we were saying.
It's a little over 1 this year.
So not great.
But then he went on this stretch. USC Upstate, it was 116. Ohio, 110. Dayton, it was 104. Rhode Island, 134. And then George Washington, it was 216. And wow. He's improved his jumper a lot, too, is one thing that we've noticed. He's only shot 14 threes, but he's made 6 out of 14. So you want him to be in that spot-up shooter role more. And he's a good rebounder, too, if you look at the underlying numbers. Like, his rebound rate's really good. So definitely a guy I want to see out there a lot more, because he has that toughness, you can tell, and he can play.
Yeah. It's going to be huge going down the stretch, because it does not get easier going forward.
No, it does not. We can look at the next few games now. St. Louis and Chaffetz, which, I mean,
you never know in the A-10.
You don't know in this league. I watched St. Louis play VCU on Friday 10, and now I understand completely what SLU fans have been telling us all year. Like, oh my God. But ideally, you could win that game, but it's a coin flip according to the metrics with the road environment. So VCU at home were slightly favored by like 1 point.
I don't know if I trust that one, though.
Yeah. And then you have 2 tough road games with Loyola on the road and Duquesne on the road, who they're 0-4 in conference, but that good non-conference, they still are a good team by the metrics. So it just doesn't get any easier. And you aren't really heavily favored until LaSalle, which is the day before Valentine's Day. So
you still got a lot of time to go. Yeah. And I mean, also, no easy games going into the next months either, with an away game at Bonaventure, a game against Richmond at Richmond, a game against Dayton at Dayton, obviously quad 1A opportunity right there. But I think you're not really looking for an at-large bid. You're just trying to avoid the pillow fight at this point, unfortunately.
At this point, the goal is to get to just 8 or 9 conference wins and put yourself in a position where anything can happen, because this is the league where anything can happen. We say it over and over again, but it's true. And right now, it feels like 2 through 15 are just, they're really closer than they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the league's gotten better than last year, by every ranking, it's like the 8th best league in the country right now, where we were below the Ivy League last year.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you get into that 7, 8, 9 range, you can still win a couple games and make some noise and give yourself momentum at the very least. So
to wrap it up a little bit, let's think about this. What would a successful end of the season for the men's team look like for you? What would a successful end of the season look like for the women's team to you?
For the men, I want to see a very consistent lineup. So I think you mentioned this earlier before we recorded, but finding those lineups. At this point, the wins and losses, because you're not competing for an at-large, they're kind of, I don't want to say they're irrelevant, but it's more important that you find your best team for the conference tournament at this point.
Especially since, you know, we're running this roster back one more time, it seems like, with the exception of Grant Hoffman, with the exception Skogman and Cochera. This is basically what you got coming in next year, too. You don't have a lot of junior leadership. In fact, there's one junior on the roster, and that is the man Jarvis Moss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a relatively young roster.
And the thing I will say is that, like, Mike Lochner, Enricus Schulte, and Hunter Adam, I've liked the minutes they've had, you know? It's just that, you know, obviously they're not starting caliber minutes yet. They're true freshmen. But they're guys that I just want to see get some run because they've shown flashes. Rikus's offensive rating in the 5% of minutes he's played, it's 125.8. That's pretty good. He had some moments against Dayton you liked. Mike Lochner, he hit several threes in the Lynchburg game, but it's a 122.4 offensive rating. And Hunter Adam, he nearly had that shot go in, which would have been,
amazing.
Amazing, but I mean, you just watch him. He has great energy and enthusiasm off the bench, and he goes on heaters too. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is going to develop really nicely. Okay, so looking at the women's schedule, we talked about UMass Wednesday, which is, I mean, you got to win that game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Davidson at St. Joseph's, 27th of January. That's going to be a tough one. At Bonaventure, you get SLU at home, which is the team that won the A-10 last year, but they're not quite as good. Loyola's not particularly good. You can get revenge against Mason on the Valentine's Day game. And then at Rhode Island. And after that, the schedule gets a little bit easier. You play Dayton that you've already beaten. You play Fordham, who you've already beaten at home. You play GW, and then St. Louis away, hopefully after you've already beaten them at home. So you can still get to that 11-12 wins. I'd say 12 wins should be the goal in conference play.
Yeah.
And get that momentum back in the conference tournament because you just nearly beat Richmond, who's the top team in the second. They're either first and second in net rankings.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can still compete with these teams. That's the thing. We've shown that. So now it's just about getting back into that higher gear, which we know they're capable of. And, yeah, get to the A-10 tournament where anything can happen with, like, 12 wins. And you never know. St. Louis was not supposed to win the A-10 tournament last year, despite Rhode Island and UMass being looking like juggernauts, sort of. So, yeah, I still have a lot of faith in this team.
Oh, completely. It is a little disappointing that you're not going to see them at complete full strength and see what they can do in the A-10. But I think this is still a very good, very competitive A-10 team, and I'm excited to see where the rest of this season goes. All right, so that's going to be it for us tonight. Look forward to more episodes in the future with another new guest host because, you know, we're going to be graduating soon. So it's not going to be our podcast forever. You've heard our wonderful voices sporadically for the last 3 or 4 years. But even all good things have to come to an end at some point. But
that's true.
Be on the lookout for some more basketball content. Some more post-game coverage and baseball and spring sport content coming up too.
Yep, we're going to do that. And maybe I'll come back for a fifth year. I'm not sure.
Yeah, where are you using your grad year?
A master's in Lux's Litterbox Studies, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Honestly.
COVID year, you know.
That would help us with our grad student problem at Davidson.
Yeah, we could start the Lux's Litterbox grad student program. And, you know, we could, like, teach, like, Bojangles NIL money deals. And we could like keep players for an extra year. Maybe that would help.
I would charge less than $70,000 a year too.
So. I would, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Have a great one and go Cats. Rawr.